Clay. Good. How you doing?
Order the Monday, March 4th Planning and Development Committee meeting, Committee of Council to order. And first order of business would be approval minutes from the February 4th meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for approval of the minutes from February 4th. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, they're approved. Yeah, public comments. What we're going to do is ask everyone who has public comment to go ahead and speak at the beginning during this public comment period, because we have a number of things on here, so we're going to try to move the meeting along as quickly as possible. So what I'd like to ask is anyone who wants to speak during this public comment period on any topic, if you would go over to the podium and give us your name and address and 2 minutes. So do we have anyone? Clay?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Clay Duffy, 530 Reed Street, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, today you're going to be discussing a text amendment to the current zoning ordinances relative to MPW's request for the permission to construct a monopole on our property. We understand what staff is presenting to you would require us to go before the BOZA in order to get a special exception. We would respectfully request that we not be required to do that. We believe that a text amendment to the ordinance that would allow the same type of structure to be constructed on LI1, Jeff, could also be constructed on PI2, which is basically the town's property and waterworks property and no others in town. So that would restrict it to the town being able to provide a monopole and Mount Pleasant Waterworks being able to provide a monopole, and it would not require us to go before BOZA. It would be a staff decision, with council obviously having the final say.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Clay. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Michelle Whitduck, 712 Hibbins Grant Boulevard.
Can you just move the microphone down?
Yes. Michelle Whitduck, 712 Hibbins Grant Boulevard. Why is the town proposing that townhomes be prohibited as short-term rentals unless they are owner-occupied? I've asked this question multiple times in person and by email, and I've not received an answer explaining this strict regulation. It leads me to believe the town wants to regulate just to regulate, without proof of any problem being in existence. I feel it is a violation of my rights as a homeowner when I legally purchased the property in a no HOA community. If I wanted regulations, I would have bought in a subdivision with covenants and restrictions. To have the town dictate how I can rent the property out and how many rentals are allowed on the same street is an infringement on my rights. Will you impose the same regulations on long-term landlords? Do you feel this is the solution to Mount Pleasant's housing affordability problem? Will those of us who have poured our money and time into our properties, which have improved our neighborhoods, now be punished for our efforts? Or will you really take the time to consider our rights as well as the well-being of all concerned? I can tell you this. If I am no longer allowed to use my townhome as a short-term rental, it will not transition into affordable housing. It will remain a quality furnished rental, but for 30-plus days occupied for 100% of the month rather than 60% as it is now, and without the requirement of accommodations tax or license, permit, and inspection fees. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Back up. My name is Mary Ricosi. I live at 615 Bay Tree Court here in Mount Pleasant. I, too, am a short-term rental owner. I feel like month after month I've gotten up and basically said the same thing over and over, so don't want to beat a dead horse today. I just want to say thank you for taking your time and doing this slowly, looking it all over, making sure that the rules and regulations that are put in place are something that work for all of us. You know, I don't have a problem with regulating it, taxing it, you know, within reason. I don't want the big dogs to come in and wreck it for, you know, the little guys. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir. If you'd give us your name and address in 2 minutes.
Hey, Thomas Donaldson, 1649 Lauda Drive. The proposed regulations on short-term rentals list protecting the character of neighborhoods as a primary goal, but I fear that applying these blanket rules will actually harm the character of some communities, because the reality is that we live in a big town. Not every neighborhood is the same and has the same character and values. Nobody knows what a neighborhood needs better than the people that actually live in that neighborhood, so I see no reason why these types of regulations couldn't first be brought up with the HOA. But I think that ship has probably sailed. So regarding the proposed draft, along those lines, I believe that proposed short-term rentals by street section are completely unfair and should be removed. As Mr. Brimmer pointed out in a previous meeting, a system like this might work for a community that has a street grid like Durango, Colorado, which I believe is where the council did some research. But as you all know, of course, the town of Mount Pleasant does not have that kind of street layout. Imposing this blanket rule across the town would have massive disparities in how the impacts were felt. So in some sections of Old Mount Pleasant, for example, you would potentially have one short-term rental for every 6 residences. And in other neighborhoods like Snee Farm, where there are long, winding streets, you could have one for only every 50. So that piece of the legislation just doesn't make sense, and I believe it's unfair and should be removed. Lastly, along the lines of the first speaker, I ask that the prohibition on non-owner-occupied townhouse units be removed from the legislation. I believe that this was included to combat affordable housing, but I've yet to see the evidence that it would make a difference, so I ask you not to include something until the evidence is presented. I think a better approach would be something along the lines of what Ms. Whitley has suggested, as far as using the revenue from the permits of legal short-term rentals to promote affordable housing. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My name is Robert Donaldson. I live at 322 Lapwing Lane. I'm also commenting on the proposed ordinance for short-term rentals. First, I want to thank y'all for all of your work and considering everything that we have to say every month coming up here talking to you guys. I just wanted to urge the committee to reconsider a specific section of the draft ordinance, which is the spacing requirement. The proposed ordinance states that no more than one short-term rental dwelling shall be located on all properties that abut any street segment on either side of the road between intersections. Simply put, this is going to cause a problem for people who are trying to follow the rules. There are very different circumstances in which hosts operate their short-term rentals. Some people try to have as many short-term rental guests as possible in order to maximize revenue. I, on the other hand, try to limit my volume of guests and kind of just focus on big weekends. Cooper River Bridge Run weekend would be an example when there is a high demand for people looking for places to stay. That's a good weekend to just do a short-term rental kind of on a part-time basis. In the proposed ordinance, if 2 property owners who happen to be on the same street wish to operate a short-term rental, full-time or part-time, you are saying one of them will be banned. My neighbor is actually here, just out of 80,000 people in Mount Pleasant, and we are 4 doors down, and she just happens to have one too. So you are going to say one of us cannot operate just arbitrarily. I think that the town's already imposed a limit on short-term rentals with the 1% of the dwellings rule. So I ask you to kindly remove the additional requirement of the spacing. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. My name is Mary Line. I live at 911 North Shem Drive. The issue that I would like to bring before you is the difference between the short-term rentals in your home and in a single dwelling. Renting a room in your house should not have to follow the same rules, I believe, as a whole house rental. They are completely different animals. It makes sense to limit the number of whole house short-term rentals per block, as this prevents the buying up of neighborhood homes. However, renting a room in your house is basically no different than having Aunt Sally come for a visit. It does not change the essence of the neighborhood, has no effect on the neighbors, and at the same time provides tax income to the state, the county, and Mount Pleasant. I ask that these two entities, single room and whole house rentals, be treated separately and not be held to the same one per block rule. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Mr. Brock?
Steve Brock, 34, Hopetown Road, Mount Pleasant. Just a quick question at the beginning. I wonder if you guys might consider recommending putting the names of committee members on the agendas. It used to be done, and it's just a nice thing to know coming into the room. But on the subject of the agenda, I want to address item 5, I think it's 5C, proposal to amend Chapter 156, Code of Ordinance, Principal Use Table. I can't find any background for where this came from in terms of the origination or the genesis of it. And I don't recall how this came or when it was actually put in, but I have some questions about this. Why is one person, the zoning administrator, allowed to make what are essentially land use decisions because it has to do with that subject? There's no supervision. There's no notice requirement for these changes. There's no requirement to study the effect on neighborhoods or adjacent properties or anything. There's no appeal process, and even the delay period can be waived by the same person. I don't know of any situation we have where a public official can make that many decisions or make something so telling without an appeal process. Special exceptions, which is in the same body, has a BOZA appeal. I wish, frankly, you'd give it back to the Planning Commission as a duty, or at least put BOZA in as an appeal process on it. It just doesn't, somehow seems a little bit one-handed as it now, with not enough hands touching it to make sure it's properly done. Thank you.
Steve, would you do me a favor and give me a call? Because I couldn't write that fast.
Well, you only give me 2 minutes. That's talk.
But if you would, give me a call so I can get it all down.
Be delighted.
Thank you.
Hello. Council, I'm back. Vacation's over. My name is Laurie Bixler, 144 3rd Avenue, Mount Pleasant. I've gone through the ordinances. They're a lot more detailed than I expected. You've done some hard work. But in some areas, I think you've kind of sunk to the lowest common denominator. And I'm not sure that's what Mount Pleasant wants. It's really intrusive in some areas. I'm not sure that it's good for government to be coming through the house and deciding whether my storage closet is messy or not when I live in the house or maintain the house from a few blocks away. I think the writing is very vague. And as far as the fire regulations, they seem geared towards a scenario that's quite unlikely to happen and also geared towards fear, and I don't understand why we would apply these kind of regulations to a short-term rental, yet not to a standard rental, a long-term rental, or regular housing in Mount Pleasant. So if we're concerned about whether a fireplace should be clean, why isn't everybody required to have their fireplace inspected yearly? There are other things in the fire section that are really strange to have somebody inspecting and traipsing through the house and pointing out. Circuit breaker boxes in the garage, other items, including exit signs at the front door. It's very hard for me to picture an exit sign in one of our homes pointing us to a front door, because I think everybody knows where the front door is. And signs behind the back of every bedroom door. I understand maybe one sign in the house, but how many of us have ever gone into a hotel and every time stood there and read the back of the door sign so that we know how to get out? Some do, but the people who don't will never. And those will be the same people who won't pay attention to anything. As far as door locks, I double bolt my house, and I suspect that most everybody in this room has a double bolt lock on the front door of their house. It probably makes you feel safe when you're inside. So to have a ordinance that says we can no longer have a double bolt lock on the front door is kind of scary. I don't want somebody kicking in my front door.
Lori?
I'm done. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, just do that. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Kenny Kraft, 204 Spooner Lane, and also wanted to speak on the short-term rental ordinance. I also have been scrutinizing it and looking at it really closely. And, you know, with all due respect, I have to say it just there's a lot in this that just seems unreasonable, extreme, arbitrary. To me, you would think that there's, you know, rapes and murders and, you know, all kinds of this insanity going on in this town that we have to have such extreme regulations. And it just kind of, it just feels like the town's getting themselves into such a, you know, burdensome, regulation-laden situation that's, I just keep coming back to the thought that this is just such a perceived problem rather than an actual problem. And it seems like, to me, starting a little easier, you know, starting off with something that is less intense to manage, and then seeing how it goes and seeing if there's actual problems and then addressing those problems instead of imagining a whole bunch of problems and then creating something really complicated. There's, you know, specific things, you know, some of these extremes like the, you know, a parking space for every bedroom. I mean, you can imagine like a single family house, maybe it has 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms, and, you know, a bedroom has bunk beds in it, or like, you know, 2 bedrooms have bunk beds in it. Are there really going to be 4 cars at that house? There might be like a pair of adults and a pair of adults and some kids. You know, it doesn't seem like a 4-bedroom house necessarily warrants 4 parking spaces. It just seems a little extreme. It seems like, again, it's a kind of a case-by-case thing that's been extrapolated. Some really good comments have been made. You know, the spacing requirement, the declustering thing, you know, that was just a really big shocker when that came into the mix here. I was like, where in the world did that even come from? It's kind of another perceived problem that's extrapolated and, you know, really put in here that I feel like that one should be thrown out. It, especially the comments made about the long blocks and the short blocks. It just seems like really unfair and hurting some people. The 1% thing, you know, I understand other municipalities have had rules for percentages, but, you know, it just seems extremely arbitrary that that number was picked. And you know, it doesn't, I don't know that it personally affects me, but it just seems like a really arbitrary number. This doesn't affect me as much, but the townhouse thing, you know, I kind of feel like it's a misunderstanding of a definition of what a townhouse is. You know, it's really no different than a single house, a regular house is. You know, I feel bad for the people that have a townhouse that are all of a sudden excluded just because it's called a townhouse. And in effect, it acts just like a normal house. So it just seems like there's a lot of extreme unnecessary things that are in here. I feel like backing it off to something simpler would be a more reasonable approach to roll something out.
Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Alicia Lockwood, 316 Lapwing Lane. I, too, read the draft, and as a townhome owner, to me, it's, and to, well, to my neighbors, first and foremost, that means one more car, which makes 2 in my driveway sometimes. That's all. I find it very hard to justify the loss of personal rights. If I choose to rent out 1 bedroom, regardless of how I do that, we're talking 150 feet in a 1,200-foot house. And the regulations and rules on that were suggested on the draft appear to me to be quite excessive. To have multiple notices and signs and posts and to register people. I don't, as an Airbnb person, I don't register anyone. Airbnb takes care of that. People come in, it's like they're just home for the weekend. You know, they don't have to sign in. They don't have to show ID. I'm not a hotel. And I will never be an inn or anything like that. I'm just a bed where they can crash when they've enjoyed their day on the town. So I think that it would really be a lot better for everyone if it could start out simple. And if there's a need for a lot more regulation, you can add it later. But to go through a bunch of things initially that are irrelevant in some cases, or maybe you need to separate large homes or homes operating independently from someone who's just renting a bedroom, because obviously all those things are not appropriate. I mean, I have to wonder, have any of you and the other people that are working on this actually done a short-term rental or, you know, ever had one? Do you know what it's like? And I think if you realized how efficiently it already ran, you would say, we don't need to go through all this. We don't need the hassles and the headaches. And the way it's currently suggested, based on one per block, one per whatever, you're going to be turning neighbor against neighbor. And you're going to be sacrificing the individual to save the whole.
Hey, Matt, could you wrap it up, please?
Yes. So I think it would really create a problem for neighbors and a lot of animosity if you restrict. I mean, you're going to have people filing complaints on other people just so they can get them out of there so they can do it. You know, I mean, issues like that.
Ma'am,
you don't want to.
Could you finish that, please?
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much. George?
She used up some of my time. I'm George Bixler at 144 3rd Avenue, Mount Pleasant. I just want to say a couple things, and I really would prefer to ask questions of this illustrious group. Where does all this come from? What starts this with the fear of short-term rentals? Where does it come from? Why are we doing this? Is everybody afraid of the four people that are staying at a house and the four cars that aren't there every day? I just don't understand it. We have ordinances on top of ordinances that just make no sense. I read recently where there's a proposal for sprinklers in a house. Tell me what house in this city has a sprinkler system. You know, there's some motels and hotels that don't have sprinkler systems. There's another thing that's on the books about a door lock. It has to be a single action rather than a deadbolt. I think Ms. Lori, my wife, brought up that. I don't know where that comes from. Do you people just sit in a room and think of these things? What can we put on a board to make it difficult for people to try to make a living, to survive in this economy or any economy without going bankrupt? What do you do? Why do you do it?
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi there, Jean Jamay, 674 Ferry Street. I have a whole house rental that I've been running for about a year, and I'll keep my comments short and sweet. I agree with everything that's kind of been said by our short-term rental community. I'd like to address the fire safety restrictions that were put in. I checked with my insurance agent this morning, and he has me listed as a short-term rental. So my policy covers it. I've been inspected by my insurance carrier, and he sees no reason to have a fire inspection every year. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am, if you could just give your name, address, and 2 minutes.
Hi,
please.
Melissa Black, 920 Center Street, Mount Pleasant. I have been doing this for 14 years, and I started in 2002, and I did long-term rentals, and then my parents lived there while they built a house and left their furniture, so I moved to furnished rental, and then 14 years ago, I started doing short-term rentals, and I retired from 29 years of teaching. I barely got out of there alive, but I did it, and I was able to do that because of my two short-term rentals that I have. So this morning when I got up, I was really kind of freaked out, like, oh, boy, now what do? I guess I'll go back to work and sub or something. But I just have neighbors on the same street as my duplex that are long-term rentals that are, you know, the street is mostly owners that live in the house. And these tenants that live next door have dogs that don't have collars, and they run around the streets, and they breed. They're not fixed. They're intact. They don't take their trash can, sits out on the street, their newspapers they don't pick up. My people do that. My yard people come in, clean, mow their grass, take the trash back. I do it. So I don't understand the difference of long-term rental versus short-term rental. The other thing is I really felt like the violations for me would be so much greater than the people that are actually causing a problem on our street that we rent our house on. And what if they retaliated toward me and just started putting violations on my house? So I was just concerned about the governmental, my property rights feel invaded. And right now I have long-term renters. Every winter I have long-term rentals, and I don't even step on the property. You know, I'm there every 4 days when I have short-term rental in there. I'm OCD about it from the front door to, from one part of the property to the back. So I just can't see how we are harming it. And the number of 1%, I mean, how would you even notice? I mean, I just almost bought a house in Colorado that had a 6% cutoff in this little tiny town. And then I read this morning,
yes,
that's
ma'am.
300 houses. You know, that's just silly to put this much of a burden on us as short-term rental owners. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank
I
you very much.
It.
Mm-hmm. Sanford, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
Good.
All right. Couple quick thoughts. I think that the problem with government, and the reason I'm a conservative, is that oftentimes there can be a host of well-intended consequences, but the unintended consequences end up outweighing the well-intended consequences that created whatever it was that got started. And with that in mind, I think that at least what I've read thus far goes a bit too far. And so let me offer four quick points in terms of constructive criticism where I think there are change. One, you can do business in Italy, but effectively you can't do business in Italy. And so if you look at the number of things that make it prohibitive, think about this. There are over 10,000 teachers in the Tri-County area. That means 10,000 folks are going to, maybe go off to see friends, maybe they go on a sabbatical. I don't know what they do. But the idea of having things so that it has to be set up so long in advance that effectively you can't do it, I think becomes a real problem in terms of the sharing economy that we ought to be embraced. Because these same arguments were used against the likes of Uber and what? No, we can't do that. We need to have registered taxis. But in fact, Uber worked just fine, and the sharing economy works just fine. So I think there have been a host of different comments, whether from Kenny or Alicia or others, that simply say, let's more embrace the sharing economy. Let's have meaningful regulation, but let's begin it very light where we address a problem, not a perception. Second thing I'd say is, and again, Lori touched on this, for regulations to be meaningful, and they have to be fair. And so think about this. Several folks have addressed this idea of saying, you need to have fire inspections for short-term rentals, but not for long-term rentals, not for your home. What is the implicit message there? That we love the short-term rental folks that come from Illinois or from New York much more than we love people who stay here in the community for a long term or folks that actually live here as residents? I mean, if it's really about safety, then it ought to be about safety for all. We can't say selectively it's safety just for the folks that come to visit, but not for folks that actually live here in the community. Third thing I'd say is your home is your castle. The castle doctrine predicates that you can actually shoot somebody in your house based on control of the inner, walls of the house. Coming up, okay. I want to say this on that regard. Don't make my home into a hotel. It's my home. I've gone to great lengths to live by the spirit and above the spirit of law. I've paid several hundred thousand dollars to buy the lot behind my house. I have an abandoned house lot beside me that I'd love to buy that's owned by a family from Hugie. I can't seem to buy it. I live across from a water treatment plant. My neighbor is a good friend, has become a good friend. There's never been a complaint. There's never been a garbage odor. There's never been a parking problem. And so let's not create, again, a set of obstacles for a problem that doesn't exist with many. The back house of my house is entirely glass. If there was a problem, you would just go out the sliding glass door. There's no other way out. And the last point would be this. You walk through downtown Charleston, as I've done recently, and you look at Disneyland. The beauty of Mount Pleasant is that real people live here who see the ups and downs of life. I've seen ups and downs of life. And so afford people the flexibility that goes with the ups and downs of life, because I'm going to, for instance, go and teach a class at the University of Chicago, April and May. What we wouldn't want to do is to say, you know what, you've got to leave that house sitting. And whether it's for tithing with church, or whether it's for paying an ex-wife, or whether it's going for health care bills, you go down the list of different requirements. But there are a lot of different things that come up in life, and leave people the flexibility to do those things. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Pam Ireland, 820 Fiddler's Point Lane, Mount Pleasant. I agree with a lot of what's been said. What's been said is by homeowners that are renting out the place that's their primary residence, or perhaps one other place, or certainly renting out a room in their home. I think definitely the people who rent a room in their home or two rooms in their home should be split out. I don't know. I think they somehow got combined with this other issue, and I do see them as totally separate issues. And as far as the short-term rentals generally, what I'm concerned about are the investors that come in and buy multiple houses or townhomes and then start renting them out. And they become a substitution for the hotels, or, you know, when people can't afford to stay downtown or don't have places they can stay with near the beaches. So I think that there should be things very specifically pointed to those. It seems to me that if you required someone to show that they live here primarily, that they have a 4% tax because it's their primary residence, or they could substitute another property for their residence if they own a second property, for instance, that would make sense. I don't mind people getting grandfathered if there's a process to grandfather those individuals. But I think somehow what's been lost in the shuffle here is ways to distinguish the outsiders or the people here, even that may buy, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 townhomes and then turn an area into kind of a substitute vacation rental. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Lucy.
Hi, Lucy Gordon, 1551 Ben Sawyer. I want to reiterate everything that Ms. Ireland said. I think that we're capable of having an ordinance that takes care of the individual residents, which we've heard from, that either rent out their primary residence or maybe a second residence that they don't live in, but they do have a primary residence, and so they are residents of this town. And that it can be grandfathered in. I don't know if everybody went and really looked at what the grandfathering part of the ordinance would be. But I think, again, you could substitute a second property for your primary residence, but you can't have 10. You know, I think there's a big difference. The main thing, and what Mr. Sanford said about not wanting to become Charleston, that is exactly the point. Charleston has had a huge problem with people coming in, buying up properties, buying up neighborhoods, turn them into very lucrative short-term rentals, which, of course, get more money than long-term rentals, and take, you know, properties off the market. And we don't want to go down that road. They have just instituted, after 2 years of study, a set of ordinances that incorporates people who do rent out their primary residence, but it does not allow for it to become an industry that moves into neighborhoods. So I have sent you all, I hope you read them, my comments and my about the draft and suggestions for how to, I just think we're capable. We've gotten into an all or none kind of what I'm hearing, and I don't think it is an all or none. I think we're perfectly capable of having an ordinance that incorporates residents who rent out their primary residence or even a second if they want to be grandfathered, but without opening Mount Pleasant up to the industry that is now disallowed in Charleston and was not allowed in Sullivan's. We don't want to become that place. That's all.
Thank you very much, Susie. Sally?
Well, Lucy asked me if I would come and speak, and I cannot speak as eloquently as Mark Sanford, never will.
Could you give me
your address, please? I'm Sarah Jacob. I live at 1152 Village Creek Lane, and I am also known as Sally. And I tend to agree about the bedroom. The bedroom is, I always think of boarding house when I think of bedroom, and we've lived that for a long time. But I want to speak to somebody saying some nasty things about long-term rentals. We need long-term rentals. You know I'm up here arguing for that all the time. The people who work in this town need a place to live. And every time you get a short-term rental, you make more money on short-term rentals, let's face it, than you will on a long-term rental. And not all long-term rental people let their dogs free. And if you do let your dog, if they let your dogs free, then if you're you should be a strong neighbor, call the police. Call the animal control people. Or are you afraid? So I say we need long-term rentals, and that's what I'm here to speak for.
Thank you, Sally. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Okay. Seeing none, we'll proceed with the meeting. Okay. Jeff, I think we are on number 3 Alpha.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. This first request was a rezoning under consideration for MPW's property where the water storage tank is in the old village. And at the last meeting, no action was taken on the request. And so you see here on the left, the request at the time was to rezone the property to LI, Light Industrial, a telecommunications tower, which would substitute for the tanks, or the tank that's there, is a conditional use provided it meets certain conditions, and that plan is reviewed administratively by staff. Under the current zoning, the PI2, it is a special exception use. The same conditions and requirements apply. And there's also the ability in any of the districts to co-locate additional users on a tower, and that is treated as a special exception. But the difference here is that the Board of Zoning Appeals, your appointed BOZA, is the one that reviews a proposal under a special exception use. Your question to us was, is there an alternative in terms of doing the actual rezoning? And so what we offer here is one option that would leave the existing PI2 zoning in place. One of the concerns that we had as a staff is the language within the current ordinance today. And it basically says you can have a telecommunications tower for the public or quasi-public use that's occurring on that property. It doesn't really anticipate co-locations or expansions of the tower, increases in heights in the tower when it first gets built. We know the objective here of MPW is to replace the tank with a tower, but also be able to accommodate their three other users that are already on the tank. And so what we suggest is a text amendment. It would move it and leave it back in PI2, or you could do it in PI1 as well. That would keep it as a special exception use, and then we would be able to, under BOZA, when they would review this, they could look at the tower for the public or quasi-public user to begin with, as well as any additional height to accommodate co-locations, and they could do it all in one fell swoop. So that was the biggest hang-up that we had, was interpreting and applying the existing language, and which suggests that they might have to do this in two steps, rather than sort of in a rational, reasonable way, knowing what they want to do, doing it in one. And so if they were interested in doing that, they could withdraw the request for the light industrial, and then we would work on a code amendment to accommodate that, and then they would need to go through the special exception review by BOZA. Mr. Duffy's request is something different than that. It would be that it would become a conditional use, just like it is now in, say, the LI district, and there would be no additional special review by Board of Zoning Appeals. So that's a policy question and an approach question on how you would want to accommodate telecommunications towers in these different zoning districts. And we won't go through the rezoning requests, just focus on this if that's okay with you.
So if I understand this, and we have to begin by understanding that the whole cell phone tower or tank, the water tank, that's an MPW decision, so we don't have to consider that when we're doing our deliberations here. Now, the first option was to have it stay PI1.
It's and PI2 now, so it would PI2. Stay. Both those districts have the same language. It would stay PI2, but we would clarify the language so that the tower height for either the main user and or additional co-locations could be considered in one special exception request, sort of in parallel rather than tail end to tail end.
And that would go through BOZA?
Yes.
Okay, and then you said the second one you talked about would not go through BOZA.
Correct.
But it stays?
As a staff administrative review of the site plan, and it has to meet the conditions that are already stipulated in the code.
Okay, and that's PI what? That would be PI 2?
Two.
Two, okay. All right. Yes, sir. Mr. Bremer.
Clay, when you spoke, I think you accurately said that there is a mechanism in place in the town for you to achieve what you want to achieve through BOZA. But then you followed that up by saying your preference would not be to go to BOZA. You'd rather have the rezoning. Could you expand on that and tell us why you don't want to use the mechanism that's currently available to you through BOZA? Could you go up to the
Clay Duffy, 530 Reed Street, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. It's pretty obvious that based on recent happenings with the BOZA, we're much more comfortable working with town staff and with you as the deciding body as opposed to putting that our request through BOZA.
Now, you've heard these options that Jeff has talked about today in terms of a code text amendment and then going to BOZA. Does that allay any of your concern? Or
afraid not.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
GM? Anything? Nope. Okay. Do we have a motion or any further discussion?
I'll just comment, having served as a planning commissioner for several years, what was sort of drilled into our head was that the zoning on the property really is what drives how that property gets used. Because once you place the rules on that property, anything that subsequently happens has to be consistent with those rules unless the zoning changes. So the question here for me is this property appropriate for light industrial use, regardless of what the plans are, because plans could change tomorrow, they can change 5 years from now or 10 years from now. That zoning remains with the property, though. So the question for me is this property truly light industrial property, or is a property more appropriate for a public use, one or two? I'm inclined to not want to change the zoning because I'm not sure that light industrial, given all the uses of light industrial, is appropriate for this area. especially if there is a mechanism in place with BOSA. And I understand that BOSA might be more difficult or perhaps sees things differently than council, but I think that just means that you have to go to BOSA with a strong case. And if BOSA turns that down, maybe that doesn't preclude you from then asking for a zoning change. But I think to ask for a zoning change because are going in front of BOSA might not be successful, I don't think is the right use of that process personally. So that's kind of where I'm looking at it.
Well, I don't think they want to rezone from PI2 to light industrial. The idea is to go down to the first PI one or two, going to BOSA, or the second scenario as was described, going PI2, and then staff goes over everything, which would not send it to BOSA, but that the staff could do it.
That's what staff's proposing.
Yes. But light industrial, I think we discovered or talked about last time, was kind of off the table.
But that was the original request, though, correct?
Yes, sir.
So that's what we're still having to consider is
which
that.
Allowed the path of not being reviewed by BOSA, but was a site plan review by staff.
Right. Okay.
Well, and I think whatever we make a motion to do, I said that light industrial, I didn't want to see it zoned light industrial because 15 years down the road, you know, we could have a tattoo parlor or whatever because that's allowed in light industrial. But I think the PI2 and then giving staff the authority to deal with it is probably a better scenario.
I agree with that.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Sir, Jeff and I haven't exactly vetted this part of it out yet, but in my opinion, that puts staff in a very difficult situation. Huh. I think if council's intent is to allow for a public institutional entity to be able to have a cell tower, then it should be allowed within the zoning ordinance. So if it's council's intent through this committee to allow, say, PI2 mm-hmm. to have a tower, they should say it right in the zoning and not leave it up to staff or appointed board to make that decision. It should go right into the language.
Well, and I believe it says there that there has to be a text change to do that. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. But not a deferment to a staff or even an appointed body to make that call, that it's an allowed use within the zoning.
If there's a text change.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Correct.
That's where I thought we were moving to last time, change the wording, and so that would be allowed under the zoning. That's where I thought we were
correct.
Going to, so yeah. It's not where we ended up, apparently.
Okay, well, no, I think we can still do that.
Yeah, we can.
Yes, ma'am.
I am not sure that, for me, where I am, that I would want a monopole in that area. You know, I think we've received a lot of feedback from the public in the neighboring communities, and this pole would be taller than the water tower. I think it's easy to sort of punt and let BOSA handle it, but I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with voting to approve a monopole on this land.
And that's our options here are to do the text amendment. And then consider after the text amendment is in place or not, the rezoning. Is that correct?
Depends on the name. Yeah. The text amendment incorporates the use. There is no rezoning required.
Right. Okay. Got it.
And by text amendment, Eric, you're talking about a text amendment that would then make that monopole and the quasi-public use acceptable under that zoning,
by
correct?
Use, yes.
I'd like to make a motion that we proceed in that direction for a text amendment. Oh, wait a minute. Whoa.
The sole agenda item is this request for a zoning change. What I would suggest is that's perfectly fine, and if you want, staff can bring that a proposal back next month like that if you want. for consideration, but from a notice standpoint, gotcha. The only thing we're talking about today
is
that issue. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, honestly, I think the way to go forward here is what Mr. DeMora stated, which is let's take whatever action we need to make to allow that, make the goal of MPW allowable on that property through the zoning. But in terms of this request, I would then recommend that we deny this request as it is printed in the agenda.
Okay. Do we have a second for that?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. And just so we're clear, Mr. Pagliarini, we deny this and then we go back in for the text amendment that's
yes,
cool
sir.
Under the rules.
Yes, sir. And the text amendment would have to be considered through the normal process, committee, planning commission, public hearings, and the like. So
okay.
That's the process. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, sir.
Under public use, how do we define public? Can one of these poles go into a school or a...
Yeah, you'd be opening up the entire...
State, any state-owned property, any county-owned property, anything, without coming to anybody, can put one of these on their property and... Okay, just...
Here's the existing language, Mr. O'Rourke. So within this particular subsection, police, fire, public works, utility, and other public service providers are covered into this particular provision.
And I'm okay with it, but once we change that text to allow a use we all think should happen, we open a whole bunch of other doors as well. And we can have public domain cell towers all around this entire community. And I'm not so sure that's what we want to do as we fix something we want to do. So that's just a comment.
Well, there's, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't a part of this for reading water meters as well and providing for police? What, repeaters or?
And just to clarify, and that's it? There are no other, there's no public uses going to a, I mean, am I hearing that the uses on that pole are only for Mount Pleasant Waterworks business?
No.
Right.
No.
Okay. All right.
There's three other carriers on the
right.
Tank now. They would transfer to
right.
the
Right. Okay.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to deny 3A. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. That's a recommendation to deny. And then with regard to the PI-1 with text amendment, do we have a motion regarding that?
PI-2,
I'm sorry.
I think we can't make a motion regarding that. It's not on the agenda.
It can just be brought back next month.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That direction.
Okay.
Follow back up.
All right. If you would bring it back next month with the discussion that you've heard, and we'll go forward there.
Good.
All right. Annexations. Are y'all clear on what's going on? Okay.
Annexation A419 is 0.86 acres of land at 1593 Boston Grill Road. It is identified for community conservation land uses and would be given the CC zoning district, and the property is vacant. Here is the aerial photo that shows you where the property is located, and it is adjacent to a couple of other parcels. Here's the land use designation for the community conservation in yellow, and you'll see those other three parcels on the other side of Boston Grill Road. Those were recently annexed, so this would be another parcel that would connect across the street back to the town limits, and then the crosshatch is unincorporated Charleston County.
Okay.
You approve recommending annexation.
Second.
Have a motion to recommend approval of annexation. Any discussion? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. Okay, number five.
Planning Commission recommendations to you. First one involves an annexation and a parallel zoning request for other property owned by MPW on Labor Camp Road. It's about an acre of property. The plan recommends community conservation land uses in this location, but the existing facility, as you'll see in a second, is already on PI2 land. It is vacant, but would be expected to be an expansion of existing MPW activities on the property. So you see the tank and MPW activity development on the larger parcel, and then this piece is adjacent, again, shown as community conservation in our plan, but unincorporated and zone PI2 next door, and so it would be a service use within this area, and it would all be zoned then PI2 for MPW activities. And the Planning Commission recommended approval.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
They recommended approval on the rezoning.
On the rezoning, yes, sir. Not the annexation.
Could you go back two slides for me? One more. Thank you.
Did they give a reason why they didn't recommend approval on the annexation?
They don't review annexations.
Say again?
Oh. Planning Commission doesn't review. We're just packaging them together for you.
I got it. Okay.
I'll make a motion that we recommend approval of item 5A.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for recommendation of approval for 5A. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. All right, sir. Next.
And then 5B is the rezoning itself.
Motion to approve the rezoning.
Second.
You have a motion and a second to recommend approval of the rezoning to PI2?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Yes, ma'am.
Vote.
Do we not vote?
Your vote.
I didn't hear your vote.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, C.
Item 5C is a text amendment that relates to the allowance for residential uses above commercial development. And the explanation here is that in the move to shift a number of years ago to a combination of changing the zoning code to use a major principal use table and a listing, when it was adopted, it allowed multifamily residential development above a commercial building in a commercial zoning district, multifamily being three or more dwellings. It excluded one or two. And so the change here is to bring it all in line that would say if you can have multiple three or more dwellings above a commercial activity, you surely ought to be able to have less than that, one or two, and the conditions that they all have to meet. So the use table changes in order to put them in as conditional use, and then the definition or the language changes, and you see the conditions that any one of these has to meet is that it can't be located on the street level, that's 2E1, or any other level that has non-residential. They need direct access, and the density can't exceed 12 units to the acre. So this is a minor change that would accommodate one, two, or more dwellings above a commercial building in our commercially zoned districts.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Homa?
And a recommendation from Planning Commission was for approval.
Any? GM, you have any questions? No? Okay. Do we have a motion? I'll make a motion that we recommend approval to full council.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Any further discussion?
Jeff, this is townwide. This is anywhere there's commercial zoning.
So you saw that use table with all the districts and all the C's that moved in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if it's a commercial dwelling building, this option would be available.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Recommendation approval, council.
Next one is another text amendment, Mr. Chairman, that deals with staff's ability to apply our regulations with tree protection and removal. The existing language that's in the ordinance that deals with trees that might be hazardous or in poor condition or maybe affecting, say, a structure itself, it's just awkward language, and the staff goes around and around trying to interpret and apply these provisions. So we're trying to make this a bit clearer in terms of giving us more capability to make reasonable decisions on whether or not a tree is in a poor or hazardous condition and if it's affecting private property. Oftentimes there'll be roots and root systems that are damaging the structure itself. And we expanded that then in that not just an arborist would be saying something about the tree, but an engineer would be able to give evidence that says, well, in fact, this is causing damage to the structure, and my client should be able to remove the tree, and then we deal with removal and replacement. So it's helping us as a staff administer the regulations that we have.
Jeff, is it an arborist and an engineer needed, or just one or the other?
Because
that says or, and then I just want to make sure we're not allowing engineers to make decisions on the health of trees.
May need to say and or, so we could look at that language, depending if you need both or.
Yeah. That's what I understood you say. The engineer's job is to say whether it's
structural,
or structural, but it's not really commenting on the quality of the tree.
Correct.
Okay. So maybe just clean that up a little bit. So
and or.
Yeah.
Okay, you can make that. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I saw in there it's removing a section that says due to disease or damage not caused by the property owner. Why is that coming out there? Because, I mean, if the property owner wants the tree gone and just sort of hacks at the bark, you know, hacks a strip of bark off the tree, like, oh, now the tree's dead. It's time to get rid of it. Why is that being removed?
I think that one really was more for the disease piece. I mean, it's like that's not control of theirs. I suppose you could.
It's addressed elsewhere in the ordinance.
Is yeah. it?
Yeah, if they damage it.
Okay. All right, as long as it's still in there, I don't want someone harming a tree so, you know, and getting away with it.
All right.
Make a motion to recommend approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to recommend approval of full council. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, unanimous. Update on comprehensive plan.
Well, I was about to say good morning, but I guess it's not anymore,
yeah.
Huh? this is, believe it or not, going to be very brief today because we are getting ready. This is kind of get yourselves ready. Conversation about just bringing you up to speed where we are with the comprehensive plan. In case you didn't know, I think you probably do, but. Planning Commission at their last regular meeting on the 20th of February had finalized their review. They've been working since the beginning of the year, basically meeting basically every week to discuss different aspects of the plan and working through the plan from beginning to end, and made a few modifications. Mostly a lot of them had to do with some questions that the plan forum had asked them, I want you to please look at this, and they looked at this and made the recommendation that went along with that. So they did that work, and at their meeting on the 20th, they unanimously recommended the revised plan for your consideration. So that document has been put together. What had been on the website, still on the website, as a matter of fact, under the Planning Commission's tab, was kind of a redlined version that showed what the plan form had was in black, and then what the Planning Commission was considering was in red. That's now all been incorporated into a, you know, an approved draft document that is under the Town Council tab on the comp plan page for your future consideration. And we will be putting together for y'all a kind of a schedule with your, you know, blessings, of course, a schedule of work sessions that will be going through this and working through the process before we schedule a public hearing, which the Town Council, by state law, Town Council gets to hold the public hearing, the official public hearing on the comp plan. So we'll be scheduling that in the coming weeks. That needs 30 days notice. So there'll be a lot of publicity for that, and that'll be, you know, coming your way. So that's kind of basically where we are at this point. So if you can stay tuned, we'll be talking schedule with y'all in the coming days and weeks. Try to get that going.
Okay. Thank you, Liz.
All right.
Okay, we're going on to item 6 now, which is consideration of extending 2017 moratorium on multifamily structures, and I asked for this to be put on the agenda. We have, as I drive around through Mount Pleasant, I see that we still have apartment buildings that have been built that are just really don't look like they're well occupied. So it was... I thought we should go ahead and extend that moratorium for another 2 years so that we can let these buildings become occupied before we start approving more. We thought originally that 2 years would let the folks moving in work through, but apparently it hasn't. So do we have any discussion?
I don't have any problem with this at all. I think, though, if we took action or didn't take action, we'd get the same result. Because I agree with your comment, I don't think there are many developers now looking to do this because of the vacancies, and I'm not sure there's any banks waiting to lend for that. So I don't have any problem with voting for this. But as I said, whether we do it or don't, I think we're going to have the same result. There's not going to be many more new apartments, I think, being built here.
Yes, sir.
Do we have any idea how many units have come online since the moratorium has been put in place?
We'd have to go back and calculate that. We probably have it readily available in some of our reports, so we'd be able to track that.
Okay. I'm just happy to know that Tom's microphone is working today. I didn't hear much from you today, so that's good. Tom, I agree with you. I think when we put the moratorium in place, there hadn't been any requests for new units anyway for probably 6 months before that. So there wasn't a great demand before this went into place. And obviously, we've had not put any more approvals in place since it's been. So I don't know that really will have an impact, so I'm fine with it.
Okay. The ordinance, does exempt or has exemptions for within that moratorium exemptions for age restricted or properties that either have a vested right, and so you will continue to see a few projects that were in those more in the latter, the vested right situation. So there are one or two apartment developments that are in review or in process, but we've not seen anything new being requested.
And also for affordable housing, I believe that was an exception too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. And that's good.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I remember I just attended a ribbon cutting recently, and it was for apartments in the Midtown area of Mount Pleasant. And the lady there was saying that they're hovering over 90% of the occupancy rates of their apartment complexes. So I think I'm fine with extending the moratorium, but I wonder if there's more data on, you know, is there a need, or is there enough already in the pipeline through the vested rights that's going to fulfill that need? Because I think, and I don't know again if where her numbers were coming from, but she was saying they were hovering above 90% in their occupancy.
That wouldn't be something that staff that we would necessarily track in terms of the market, and we'd have to track down that information from
those folks that are in the business in order to be able to get a feel for where they are on those.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we recommend extending the 2017 moratorium.
I'll second that.
Okay. For 2 years?
For 2 years.
Yep.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to extend the moratorium on multifamily structures. Ooh, it's a mouthful. All those, any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. Number seven, a discussion of hotel storage unit buildings and some zoning regulations. Again, this was something that I had asked to be put on the agenda. And what drove that request was especially hotels and storage units. It seems that hotels are included in a lot of our commercial zoning. And what happens is it's approved for some other use, but that hotel is an allowed use. So all of a sudden there's a hotel that we didn't intend. And that happened in downtown Charleston. It's even in the paper today. The law school property was sold, and then lo and behold, someone for, I think, an office building, and then all of a sudden it became a hotel. So the thrust of this is that hotels and storage units, which are the type development that comes out of this, a developer would have to, if he wanted to build a hotel, put it into a commercial area, but part two of that would be that he would have to come, or she would have to come to council to get approval for a hotel. It puts them, it doesn't mean they're not going to get a hotel, but we won't be faced with that specter of we didn't realize he could put a hotel there. So what has happened in Charleston would not happen here. It would be a request that would be in commercial zoning, but hotels would be a specific request, and then we would have to change our use tables, I suppose, to have hotels and storage buildings not as an included use in AB2. They would be separate. Do we have any questions, discussion?
Well, I mean, this goes back to my previous comment about zoning. I mean, once you put zoning in, you know, you're not really approving a project. You're approving all of the potential uses under a zoning. And, you know, hotel is one of those. It's in AB2. And whether it's an office building or a hotel, that use can always change. I think a previous committee today made a pretty compelling argument that when you talk about sufficiency, what's sufficient? And council members made the argument that, you know, maybe market forces should determine how much of something that we have in town rather than try to dictate it through ordinances and such. So most people probably believe that there are too many hotels. Storage facilities, I think, are a market-driven thing. If people need more storage, more storage facilities will be built, and there's probably appropriate places for those. I think the argument against storage facilities that I've heard most is not that there's too many, but of where they are. But
to be certain, this does not preclude building a hotel. It merely says that they have to come back, whoever the developer is, has to come back and say, I can't put an office building there. I want to put a hotel there. And then, you know, it's not one that we lose in the verbiage.
Well, it sounds like then what you're asking for is kind of a separate zoning category for hotels. Because if that's the case, then you don't, if that's the only use you want allowed on that property, then you need to have a special zoning district just for that use. Otherwise, you know, you're running the same problem. So if I understand you correctly, that's what you're asking for here, is a separate zoning district for hotels and for storage facilities.
It would be a separate request. And if that means a district, that's, you know, that's fine. I just don't want to see the town having hotels and storage units built in AB2 or next to neighborhoods when we say, well, that's not really what we thought we were approving, and then we come back. But if that's the way it needs to be done, I'm fine with that.
Can I comment? Yes, sir. Bob, you'd be a good, like, referee or something, because when you get the rule book, man, you are, like, right at it, which is good. That's a good thing. I don't mean that negatively. But honestly, I think we should. I mean, we're the council. We should be able to have opinions on maybe not so much what, but where. So if an office building may be okay over here, it may be okay over there. Maybe not a hotel. And hotels need services. Hotels need restaurants. So I wish we would actually look at districts for hotels. I don't think that's a bad idea. But having somebody come back to us, I don't think would be a bad thing. Because, look, they could come in and say they're going for this. And then just like you said, zoning is zoning. So if it fits zoning, it fits. But I wish we would. There are going to be hotels and motels in this town, and that's a good thing. But it would actually help them if they were all in the right place too. But if one's popping up over here and over there and over there and over there, I think we're going to look not too good. That's just my comment.
I just have a question for legal, like the legality of – because I know we're not allowed to condition zoning. So if we grant a zoning to an area for AB or AB2 and hotels and included usage, what mechanism would we be permitted? Would you shift it to be a conditional use? Or what mechanism would you use in order for council to have the ability to control what happens?
It is primarily a zoning function. And where hotels are better is really an element of the comp plan exercise and what the zoning is. So that's part of your analysis that's coming up, I would say. The part that we really need to look at is, what are we subjecting this to an arbitrary vote? And it doesn't mean your opinions aren't invalid. It means what are the standards that council would use to make that determination? We don't like it there, but we have a comp plan that says you can put it there. I mean, that would be a fundamentally arbitrary decision. So we'd really have to look at what the best options are to have a council approval and create a system that is not arbitrary that does not stand in opposition to what's been approved as a comp plan. So I think there's a lot of parts to this, but we're going to have to take a look at what the best system would be to accomplish the goal. But primarily, zoning is the best way to do that.
Well, and I think we had talked about for a while about doing overlay district, like a hotel district, or having a couple different districts in town for that. And I'm not sure if the comprehensive plan includes that. So I think it's very interesting, and we should definitely look more deeply into this subject.
Okay. Perhaps we could have planning staff bring it back to us next month with what it would look like.
Yeah, okay. And we have been looking at it as part of the comprehensive plan and looked at it some months ago, where we have maps and information showing where these are located. So we have the basis for bringing you back some more information,
right,
and how you might approach it.
Okay, and as I said, what I don't want to have happen to us, which has happened in our sister communities, is someone says they're going to build one thing and then wind up building something else, but it's an allowed use. I think specifically with hotels and these storage unit buildings that we should have a say in where they are specifically. Okay.
So we look at both of those.
Yes.
Together.
Is that good? Okay. Now, building heights, as we drive around Mount Pleasant, we had, quite honestly, I guess it was me that lost the bubble on where building heights were and exactly where. So I wanted to make sure we all know what's going on Johnny Dodds and Chuck Dawley and portions of the Boulevard Overlay District.
afternoon. So we'll just start out with the height plan map.
Okay.
And let me see if I can get the pointer going here.
Purple is 80 feet?
Yeah, so the Johnny Dodds Boulevard has three separate districts. This district here, which is, I'll kind of run a circle around it, this area right in here, is actually the hospitality and economic development portion of Johnny Dodds Boulevard. While the underlying Boulevard Overlay District uses are permitted there, it does encourage uses such as hotels, higher density office, and higher density residential, and it allows an 80-foot height, but it's limited to 40-foot within if the structure is within 50 feet of a residential property. And then the second portion of Johnny Dodds Boulevard is this green, sort of a bluish-green section you see, and that's the neighborhood commercial portion of Johnny Dodds Boulevard, limited to 55-foot height with that same requirement if you're within 50 feet of a residential property. And this portion is a little less intense and lower height because it's, while those underlying permitted uses are allowed, it's really encouraged for more uses that would support the existing neighborhoods and community. So you're looking at things like, banks, a grocery store, maybe a higher density office with some retail, coffee shop, restaurants, things like that. And then the third portion of Johnny Dodds Boulevard is this, again, this purple on the other end. And that is the kind of the medical economic development section. And what you would expect with the hospital there, it's more of a medical office, medical campus. So it does go up to the 80-foot height again, but it does encourage uses such as those uses that would be ancillary to visitors to the hospital, so hotels, maybe higher density residential that perhaps would serve as workforce housing for folks that are traveling and working in that area. And so those are the three portions of the Johnny Dodds Boulevard overlay. So as you can see, you've got 80, 55 through most of the corridor, and then 80 again. And then Chuck Dolly right down here, this thing's difficult to navigate, is that light blue area. And that's all 40 feet height limit. So you can see that light blue there. And so those are the two portions. And, of course, we have Coleman Boulevard, which, as you know, was recently changed to 45 feet. But
the question I have right there where Johnny Dodds, where Mathis Ferry cuts across on the eastern side.
Okay, so
right in there.
Okay.
That's 80 feet?
Yes, sir.
I thought it was lower than 80 feet.
80 feet there. Now, this area here is Waterfront Gateway, and that 80 feet there was put on, I'm told, prior to the height plan put the height on there prior to the Waterfront Gateway overlay, but that's 80. But yes, this is all 80 through here.
Yeah, I guess I'm talking about where the armory and the Mastery Road and all that, that's 80 feet?
Yes, that's correct.
Is that what we want, 80 feet? Eric, have you heard discussions of that before?
It doesn't seem consistent with recent desires of council that, you know, as you start to move away, I think, from the Tides and some of the other, like, residential condo buildings near the water.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling I get, just my opinion from council, has been perhaps less height is more desirable than 80 feet at those two locations. Now, the hospital side, that building's pretty tall as it is already, so that might be a little different. But sort of the gateway as you come into the community, land off the bridge at Mathis Ferry and 17, that area there, that's currently... The current allowance is 80.
Yeah, we've got some various building heights in here for reference that we could go
didn't
through.
Did we want that as it came into town to come down? That would bring it right up 80 feet and then just drop down very quickly.
We could, sir. I mean, certainly You know, if it was committee's desire, we could go back and look at, you know, perhaps more heights in that area, and perhaps even near the hospital, if that's what you chose, to make it maybe more consistent with the Coleman or even the Johnny Dodds portion.
Would y'all like? I'd like to ask staff to bring that back so we kind of see what the heights are, because, you know, that's just like Ben Sawyer. When we came in, we wanted it to come down into the town and not just have an abrupt drop. And
yeah, I have some thoughts. They're probably not good ones, but, you know, we go from 80 to 55. The finance committee chair part of me thinks if there was a reason for that 80 and it was economic development or commercial in nature that would provide more income to the town, then maybe that's not a bad idea if it was planned that way and according to our comprehensive plan. But going from 80 all the way down, maybe there's something in between that. I don't know. I don't have any indication of why it was 80 in the first place. It may be a good idea to hear that if there were some thoughts. But
well, yeah, I know that the scale of the bridge was 80 feet, you know, under the bridge, right, by the bridge and all that. But then once you get
back
to almost to Houston, Houston North Cut, it's still at 80 feet. I think we'd run into
it. Is, but I'm going to
buzz off it.
But we got to be careful too, because, you know, there's people right now in that area looking at what they're going to put into some of those parcels, and well, and they probably have that map.
Well, and just to address what you said, it was consistent with the comp plan, and that section you're talking about is the hospitality economic development.
Okay.
And so the intent was hotels, higher density office, higher density residential, which would presumably be in our draft plan, be sort of a hub area.
Yeah.
So.
And if that's the case, I don't really, like, in my gut have a super problem with that, as long as it's all condensed and it's not, and it's in one area and it's serving the goals of why we want that height, and you know, all in one specific area is okay. Hotels all together, mm-hmm. I like that.
Well, I think your idea of 55 feet or something less,
yeah,
to kind of step down,
yeah,
to,
yeah,
the urban corridor overlay there on Johnny Dodds. Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know you and I have seen plans in the past for that property, Cadillac property.
Mm.
Various things have been, like, affordable housing or perhaps some mixed use there. I don't have heartburn over 80 feet there, as long as there was something in place where if you had 80 on the front part of that, or the on the bridge side of that property, maybe higher, but then have smaller buildings back in the parcel. So I think there's ways to do that. I think that's an area that's really ripe with opportunity for us, whether it be affordable housing or mixed use or other things that can really be beneficial. So I wouldn't want to tie our hands with a lower height, but I think Tom's right in, what's the plan? In the appropriate plan, it might be okay to have some higher heights with some lower light heights next to it. So I think it's worth looking at, but I wouldn't want to tie our hands and say absolutely nothing, you know, higher than 55 or something there, because I think that's just prime property for something interesting.
Yeah.
Gia?
No.
Nothing? Okay. Yeah, you know, and I guess when I think about it, when you drive into Charleston, it's like driving down into a valley. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the bridge and everything, the scale is good. But then as we start going down into the town, I don't like that as we drive down and apartment buildings and buildings are rising above us. But if the committee would bear with me and ask staff to look at that and have a discussion and bring it back next month.
Sure.
Yeah.
And perhaps some options on primarily those properties, those purple properties that are just to the right of Houston North Cut. Maybe a strategy to address those heights, mm-hmm, on those properties. So perhaps you could have something street front a little bit higher, but then as they move back toward the residential areas, be lower.
Yeah.
And do we have I think your next slide had actual heights of buildings in those zones. Did you have?
Yeah, we had various buildings.
They're not all right there, but for instance, well, town hall is a little over 47 feet. The Walgreens over here, it's 40 feet, so that's appropriate. Mm-hmm. South Coast mm-hmm. Bank is in that neighborhood commercial. That's 44. It's allowed 55. Mm-hmm. East Cooper Hospital, 74 feet. That's in the health and wellness, which allows 80. So they're all fairly appropriate for the section of the overlay that they're in.
Okay. Well, I think if y'all could kick that around, yeah, let us know. Sure. Okay. And now the part that everyone is awaiting eagerly on the short-term rentals.
Yeah, especially me. And Mr. DeMora, if we can have disciplinary action for whatever person put this chalk in front of me, that would be good.
I think on a future slide, I have this listed as a January report, but I think it's actually a February report. But this gives you a picture of what that looked like as far as short-term rentals in the month of February. And keep in mind that short-term rental helper program that we utilize through Charleston County, it's attached to an address. So if you have a multifamily an apartment building or something, and there's one, it's under one address, it's gonna highlight that entire building. It doesn't mean the whole building's used for a short-term rental. And there's just a close-up of this side of Coleman where you can see all the short-term rentals in that area. So it's, again, I think it's February instead of January. There was 345 total units for the month of February, and again, that was tied to addresses. We were asked to come back with implications for a prohibition in townhouses and multifamily units. So right now, the draft, per the direction of this committee, we were asked to write that the townhouses, condos, and multifamilies would be owner-occupied only moving forward. Last month's meeting, we were asked to come back and say, what if we didn't allow them at all in townhouses and multifamilies? And we were told, don't change the ordinance, just come back and let us know some of those implications. And so if you look at our short-term rental spreadsheet, according to the accommodation type, about 88 of those were either in a townhouse or a multifamily unit. Of those, 11 were a portion of a unit. So what that means is 11 out of the 88 were owner-occupied. All the rest are the entire structure is rented out. So under the current regulations, as it's drafted currently, with that grandfathering status, they would be able to come in if they could prove it. But if they weren't operating right now and were not non-conforming legal and grandfathered in, there would be that portion would go away. They would not be able to operate. So that kind of gives you an idea of how many are non-owner occupied in those types of dwelling units. We were also asked to compare what other municipalities do. We've brought this table to you before, so I just threw it back up there and kind of highlighted that section. The city of Charleston currently allows rooms in a house or duplex only, and they also allow an ADU or carriage house if the host or owner stays in a primary residence. Charleston County, you can rent out the entire house. An ADU and a primary house. You can also do single-family detached, attached, manufactured housing, or a multifamily unit. They're split up into different parts, though. So you have a limited home rental and an extended home rental. The limited home rental must be owner-occupied. The extended home rental can be owner or non-owner occupied. Sullivan's Island, our whole house rental. Owner does not have to live on site. And then City of Beaufort, you can do whole house rental of one room in a house or a carriage house or ADU, and you have the option. The property owner may or may not live on the premises. And so that kind of gives you an idea of what some of the other municipalities do with regards to owner occupancy when it comes to a townhouse or a multifamily unit, in contrast to what our draft ordinance currently says. The financial department put together some financial considerations that I'm going to attempt to go through, but they are here if you all have questions. So just some considerations for the program administration. Short-term rentals are one or more units rented less than 30 consecutive days. Long-term leasing or sell, three or more units is leased more than 30 consecutive days. Three or more allows for units that are truly in the business of the long-term renting. And so they just threw some numbers out. What would it take to generate $25,000 in gross income? If you did, so if a short-term renter operated to rented their home for 240 nights per year, it's 20 nights a month, at 104 per night, you would get $25,000. And if you did 240 nights per year, 20 nights a month, with 208 per night, you would get $50,000. And then that kind of gives us this. And if y'all got a copy of the draft, the most recent draft, and right now I think we have the permit fee at $250, but we've bounced around whether it should be $500 or not. And so if you look at the bottom, it kind of tells you what if we had 250 short-term rentals, and if the permit fee was $100 versus $250 versus $500, what kind of income that would generate. And then if you go down and you look at the potential costs of the program, hiring somebody, doing the fire inspections, the software that we've bought into, and then you can get a picture of the funding shortfall. And so that's something that Marcy and her group put together for y'all just to kind of take a look. And because the main thing with this, I think, that we've heard throughout the process is that y'all want it to be sustainable. And so those are certainly some things we need to consider as we come up with the fee schedule and what it's going to cost and everything. So the draft ordinance you've had before you that we sent last week, the main elements of that, it creates one process for all types of short-term rentals, whether you have a whole house, whether you rent one room up to six rooms in your house, or whether you have an accessory dwelling unit. It would require an annual registration and safety inspection fee. It would require a business license for just one unit. So right now you can have a short-term rental. You have to have more than four to get a business license. And so the way the draft ordinance is written, just to have one, you would need a business license. It does have the declustering and the cap, so it establishes limits on the number of short-term rentals throughout the town by that 1% cap and then also on a street segment. It also prohibits the use of a structure as a short-term rental that does not meet the definition of a dwelling unit. So you can't have a room over your garage or a man cave or a pool house or things like that that we're seeing that are used quite frequently that haven't been inspected and properly permitted as a dwelling unit. And then last, it establishes occupancy and parking requirements as well as penalties for violation. So we've been working on this for months. We've had financial look at it. We've had business license look at it. We've had legal look at it. And so legal certainly had some concerns. And so we wanted to bring those up. And one of them is the spacing requirement and the overall cap. Legal has some concerns related to the enforcement of that and then the constitutionality. Planning staff certainly had some concerns regarding the administration of it. I think it was mentioned in one of the comments that the only place we've seen this done with the street segment is Durango, Colorado, which has a population of about 19,000 and has about 25 square miles or something to that effect. And so when you look at the size of Mount Pleasant and you look at how that's going to be administered, it's certainly something that we need to keep in mind as far as how that's going to work. And I think legal would like to vet that perhaps a little bit more. And then legal also had some concerns regarding the owner occupancy requirements, how they were different for single family versus townhouse and multifamily dwellings. So that's all I have, unless you have questions and you want to discuss these a little bit further.
Okay, could we go? I'd like to kind of take these one at a time, these portions of this. Perhaps we could go back to the licensing. I think that's about five or six slides back.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Okay. All right, that's good. So they would have to, if a person has a short-term rental, they'd have to buy or obtain a business license.
Yes.
Whether it's a room and rent a room, one room in a house, or three bedrooms, or whatever is a short-term rental.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So do we have any discussion on that? Licensing?
May I?
Yes, ma'am.
I think that given the chart that was up there from Marcy and her team, having a $500 a year registration fee makes the most sense because that covers the cost of administration of the program with additional revenue that we could, and then in the finance committee, because I was told at the last monthly meeting that we cannot have an ordinance that designates funding for affordable housing through the fee, that we would have to do that through finance or through the budget. So I think that having the ensuring that the annual fee is sufficient to cover the cost of the program with leftover for to be funneled to affordable housing, I think is important to me.
Okay. And that would be with a business license, correct? The 500 is the annual fee, and then the business license is
separate.
Say again?
The business license would be separate.
Separate, okay. Mm-hmm. And how do we determine what the business license fee is? How much the unit makes?
Yes, sir. It's based on revenue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So let's talk about the $500 annual fee first.
I have so many things. I will try to keep them all in line, but Jim, I don't think I like the whole turn the extra over to affordable housing, because there's not going to be any extra, first of all. And I think that workforce housing or affordable housing is such an important discussion on its own that we can't look at funding that on this. That's just an editorial. The other thing, just overall, I'll just get it out at the first comment, and I haven't made a lot of public comments on my thoughts on this, but this looks so laborious to me. I mean, like, on everybody. And if we did nothing, let's say we did nothing. I'm not for not doing nothing. I think everybody should be registered, and I think there's a whole lot of people doing this that aren't on your little chart either, by the way. If we did nothing, I think what you would see happen, neighbors that don't like this will form some type of association that will try to disallow it. I live in a neighborhood that doesn't allow it. Okay, I live there, so we won't have them in my neighborhood. But, you know, the libertarian in me just feels like we've got a whole lot of stuff going on in this issue that if we could just simply turn this thing around and register everybody with business license that we possibly can, and maybe lighten up on the requirements, we might have a good first step right now. We can talk about this, and we will talk about this probably for the next few months, to try to get every line right and everything else right. But at the end of the day, for me, I don't have a problem with it. I don't see why you should separate townhouses and condos from everything else. I think if it's not going to be done, it ought to be not done by the association that's there, but just one person out of nine, I think we're ready to get down to something that's as laborious as anything else we're doing in this entire town, in my opinion. That probably didn't help, but.
Since we're sharing comments, I'll go ahead. I think this is a good example of sometimes you can look at something so hard for so long that you lose sight of what you're looking at. When this thing first started, I was okay with the idea of regulation and looking at this. And as we dug into each element in depth in these meetings, what I noticed myself doing was focusing on the trees and not the forest. And today was a good meeting where the focus was, at least from the speakers, was back in the forest. And as I went through this ordinance, I just thought, wow, this is complex, and it's intensive. And I'm not sure that was our intention in the beginning. Looking at the fire inspections, I mean, wow, that's a lot. So I think George's comment earlier was, what was our purpose for this at the beginning? Because it seems like we've strayed pretty far from that original purpose. So I'm going to need some more time to look at this and really just get back to the original purpose of this and streamline what we're trying to do here personally, because I think we've strayed too far from the original question.
Jamie, well, in certain ways I agree with what we're doing. I think we need to take this in steps, because I don't think it's like trying to take a sip out of a fire hose.
Yes.
I, for one, would like to see the portion of the business licenses and then the annual fee paid, so that we'll see. You know, I hear people say, I think you'll find you have a lot more than you think you do, and I think that's probably so. And I think we need to look into some grandfathering, because there have been people who have done lived in one house and rented another, and you know, I understand that. And there are people who have pool house that they've been using, and you know, we need to have a mechanism to kind of sort through those, and you know, have some grandfathering, but when things change hands, it's done, rather than trying to root people out that are doing this. But I do believe the first step is to find out the magnitude of this thing, and then we'll go into, you know, and the safety part I think is important. And I think it's important for this reason. If the town issues a business license, takes a fee, and then it's just, you know, it's like anywhere else that's offered to the public. You know, it's, if you're licensed by the town, I think the town is saying this is safe, or it's clean, it's a livable place. And there's the town of Mount Pleasant business license up there. No, you know, and we may have to sort through that, but I think the town is on the hook when they give a business license to a business, that it's safe and it's well organized. So I think that it may not be as much as we have, and I think we did the right thing to ask for these things, so that we see what it looks like, because otherwise we never would have known.
Right.
But I think the order of magnitude is something that's important, and I think the 1% is important, because as the town grows in dwellings, that 1% is centered in the old part of Mount Pleasant, because it doesn't have an HOA. So if there are 90,000 or 40,000 dwellings, that 1% is all going to be in the old part of Mount Pleasant. And I don't, you know, that's not right either. So I'm not sure 1%.
I'm sorry, sir. I think I interrupted you by accident. I was just clarifying with staff that they're currently not allowed in the old village historic district.
Or historic. I'm old part of Mount Pleasant. That part that doesn't have an HOA. I think that, you know, saying 1%, you know, that 1% is going to be centered in the old part of Mount Pleasant, not the old village or the new parts that have HOAs and regulations against that. That's where I am with this, and I think we've got to get a good accounting for what we have first. And a lot of these things that folks have talked about, you know, I think are going to be included, but we've got to find out what the order of magnitude is of short-term rentals.
Yes, Mr. Boussis, I would agree with you. I would suggest that our discussion at first be limited to, let's talk about the registration and fees first. Let's get that so people understand what we're talking about financially. Once we work out that part of it, perhaps grandfathering is next. But all this other stuff about where they are and how much they are and who can do what, I think that is down the road because it's just too complex. But I think, you know, we do need to have a registration. I've heard almost every speaker come up here who has an STR say, we're okay with registration. We're okay with business
licenses. Only ones doing it by the book.
And that's fine. but I think let's start there where everybody's in agreement. Let's start with a place of agreement first and then chip away as we go forward is my suggestion. Oh, and one other comment. Michelle, I know when some of the speakers were speaking, I was watching you and some of the criticisms of the ordinance. You all were doing really good to get us what we asked for. I don't know that the committee's direction was clear for staff. So I think you did a good job with this. I just don't know that it's exactly what we were wanting. So good work on this. We're going to keep at it until we get it right.
Yeah. You know, we were in uncharted waters here. But I think it's now coming into focus.
Yeah,
I
do.
I guess to follow up on that, what do you want next month? I'm a little confused.
Well, if you're going to ask hard questions,
so I'd like
then,
to get it right this time.
Well, I think it's fair to give them an outline of the things you started to talk about. And the first thing was you mentioned the business license fees and those type of things. It would be nice if we knew and then this, and then this, and then this, so that we could actually get somewhere, I think.
Well, let me ask this as we plan this. Eric, I see Melinda's back there. So would we go to council with this portion of it to pass, or it's going to be a separate action, and then... You know, Melinda's going to have to, you know, 1,000 people could walk through the door the first day. So.
Yes, sir. I mean, we could bring back next month an ordinance that just speaks to the annual registration, the business license requirement, which, by the way, is a requirement today. Mm-hmm. Business license requirement, the annual fee, and then in the ordinance we would drop the four to perhaps down to, say, more than one or one, whatever the prevailing wisdom is, and have that ready for you. And then at that point, you could choose to adopt it, send it on the council for approval, and then as that's in existence, you could work on deciding or perfecting amendments to that ordinance.
Yeah. I just really do believe we have to know how many there are out there. Mm-hmm. As I said, what the order of magnitude is for this. Okay, anything else? Yes, ma'am.
I guess I'm hesitant to move forward with this in a piecemeal fashion because my concern would be if we move forward and say, okay, business license and annual fee, and then everyone kind of comes in and gets their license and gets established and then sort of in reliance on that, it becomes harder for us to then go back and say, well, yes to townhomes if owner-occupied, no to multifamily, yes to, you know, there's just this sort of almost, I think we have to kind of establish the boundaries of what is considered, you know, what would be acceptable as a short-term rental, or if we're saying this time period is going to be a grandfathering in time period where anyone who wants to get their short-term rental can just get on the books with us, and until we get the next... And then when the new ordinance goes into place, that's the stopping point, and then moves forward from there. So I mean, I think we've been working on this for a really long time. So it's very tempting, I think, to get something on the books. But if we don't have a cap, if you're thinking just licensing and thing in this grandfathering period with no cap, we could get, like you said, 1,000 walking in, and then we've got this open sort of open free range period before we sort of actually have a regulation.
Everyone's required to have a business license if they rent?
Yes, they rent. As long as up
it's
to a certain point. That's right, up to four. So after that, typically in town, if anyone operates a business, they should have a license. There are certain things that are excluded. It would be the four on the screen above, and that's it.
Could we get the business licenses without the without the annual fee. Oh, I'm sorry. Could we get the business licenses without the annual fee and then track down what we have left?
Do you know?
Yes, sir. What we have prepared to go along with this is an amendment to our business license ordinance. Given that the business license ordinance only requires one when you have five or more, what we were going to do is go ahead and we have that provision that would mirror this, that would have one for each one. So we could go ahead and bring our business license ordinance. We have a couple other tweaks we'd like to make at the same time, but we could go ahead and do that and start requiring them for if you have one or more short term.
Okay, and then we could take that to council next month. I think that way we could find out how many we have without charging anyone, you know, that annual fee. And then if we find out we have more than that 1%, you know, maybe we'll have to go to 1.5% or whatever. And then as people change uses, we can lower that.
And just a question for Marcy. Sorry. So under our current ordinance, if somebody's operating a business without a business license, there are penalties for that, correct?
Yes, sir.
So we would just institute these same penalties if they're operating an STR without a business license. That would just carry over, right? Same thing?
If you implement the STR, yes. If they don't have if they have one and we change it, we would certainly they'd have those implement it.
So if we were to do this, then whether it was whole home, owner-occupied, townhouse, multifamily, owner-occupied, or whole multifamily, basically anything that is currently being used as a short-term rental, accessory dwelling unit, pool house, mm-hmm. Frog with no kitchen, I mean, basically this move would allow anything that is currently being used as a short-term rental to come get a business license for that short-term rental.
That's correct. Our current ordinance defines a short-term rental as 28 days and less. It doesn't specify the type of structure.
So that I guess just...
But I guess...
And the business license doesn't actually require, and I found this out, the business license doesn't actually require an affidavit stating that you're in compliance with your HOA. So this would also allow people in HOAs to get a business license to run a short-term rental because there is no requirement under our business license ordinance that there be any sort of attesting that they're in compliance with their HOA. And, in fact, home-based businesses are not required to attest that they're in compliance with an HOA that may restrict home-based businesses, which to me is an also problem. But, like, this is what I've been learning as I've been researching this a little bit more. My neighborhood doesn't allow an HOA, but I could apply and get a business license doesn't allow short-term rentals, but I could apply and get a business license for it under the current, if we move in this direction. Because there's no requiring an affidavit or an attesting that I'm not violating the covenants and restrictions.
Doesn't Charleston do something along the lines of, in order for you to post it on Airbnb or these other websites, that you have to have a code from the city saying no? That's not the case.
Well, the other thing I know Lucy brought it up, that one situation that we really do not want is a company that comes in and buys a row of townhouses, and it becomes a de facto hotel. Yeah. So this will be a good way to find out how that's working and if it's happening. But isn't it the HOA's responsibility if they find someone running a business
yes.
that's not allowed? Isn't it their responsibility
yes,
to find
it's
it?
Theirs, yeah. But I guess my question is if we issue these business licenses and find out that there's a row of townhomes that are all being used, but now they all have business licenses, and so for us to 3 months from now go back and say, no, you're not allowed to do that. I think we're potentially creating more of a problem.
I might be wrong, but I don't see that, and here's why. They're required today to have that. They have to have it right now. Mm-hmm. So by getting a business license, that's not a permission to do anything. In fact, it's the opposite. If you have a business, you have to go get the business license. So if somebody isn't renting a property, isn't doing anything, why would they come and get a business license? It's not a, we're not giving them any permission to do anything. So I don't see why, maybe I'm not seeing it right, but to me, I don't think there'd be an influx of people coming to get business licenses for a business they don't even have yet, because we can't make a decision up here. You know, they probably don't know, they're not going to go do that. That's just my opinion. I also think that we are kicking the ball can down the road again. I do. I feel like the more we're kicking it. Here's a suggestion. I think we should handle this by first, who's going to be included in the discussion that we're about to have that's going to take a long time? Are we going to include townhouses? Are we going to include condos? So let's get that all straightened out first. If you're kicking the condos out, kick them out. Kick the townhouses out. But if they're included, they're included. Then we make the rules from there. So maybe we do two things at the first meeting. We discuss the business license fees and things like that, and we discuss who will be the people involved in our discussions. So let's have the townhouse condo discussion at that same meeting, and then when it's time to have the discussions, we'll then know who's all included and who's not included. Just a recommendation. Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, we're at the meeting.
Okay.
So, yeah. Let's go ahead and nail this down.
I think I would like, and I don't know if it's a motion yet.
Okay.
But I think condos and townhouses ought to be in the mix with everybody else.
Condos, townhouses.
Apartment complexes.
Apartment complexes.
Multifamily. Let's see, whole house. And rooms in a house. So I guess the only question now is, should multifamily be included in short-term rentals? Condos, townhouses, whole house, rooms in a house, ADUs.
And what about, like, accessory dwellings that aren't they're not technically dwellings, like they don't have a kitchen, you know what I mean? Like, you might have a room above a garage that doesn't have a kitchen, or what are those called? Is there a word for them?
There's different ones. I mean, I know there's some pool houses that are rented out that just, you know, maybe have a small refrigerator and a bed.
So we're going to potentially also allow people who are in HOAs to get these business licenses and then deal with the HOA on themselves? Is that?
Yeah, if they're hiding it from the HOA, that's on them.
Not our problem.
Our problem.
And the HOA will probably fine them or whatever their rules say.
So is the question here, which groups are we going to allow to rent? Or
correct.
Is the question, If they're in an apartment and doing this, how do we deal with them? Because I'm sure there are people who have apartments who are renting out a bedroom. Are they just outside the ordinance here and doing what they're doing? Or do we bring them in saying, you're doing it anyway, let's at least get your taxes and fees and everything from you?
Well, I think where it says rooms in a dwelling, that would cover apartments, but not apartments in and of themselves.
Is that a distinction? Is an arbitrary distinction whether or not someone's living in the apartment renting out a room or if they're renting out the whole apartment? And that's where Weagle comes in, right, to where they've say they've got some potential concerns about distinguishing between these different categories.
The owner-occupied versus non-owner-occupied. Yeah.
I think so. I think if it's owner-occupied and someone's renting a room in their apartment, they buy a business license and they're good to go.
But if it's not owner-occupied, then no.
If it's not owner-occupied, if you rent an apartment and then you go live somewhere else and you start renting your apartment as a short-term rental, I think that should not be allowed.
Not owner-occupied at all? So.
Yeah, if there's no one living there, as I said, if someone owned it,
yeah,
but they bought a house and they said, well, I can rent the apartment as a short-term rental and make more than enough to pay the rent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just for clarification, if you have a townhouse and you're going to rent that out as an Airbnb, that's not allowed because they don't live in there?
No, that is allowed. He's saying apartments.
Oh, apartments? I think apartments is a tough discussion. They're going to have to get a lot of – because what if somebody owns a whole gigantic apartment building and they decide, since they're the owner, to Airbnb the whole darn thing? Then we got a real problem.
Then it becomes a hotel.
It's a hotel. Yeah, then the hotel people will be lining up and speaking every 2 minutes. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I'd like to suggest that since we're about an hour past our time today and we've got several more committees, that we probably strategize a way to move forward on this for the next meeting so that we don't kind of just bounce things back and forth. Maybe we can give some thought to that in terms of prioritizing some topics for next time.
Yeah, I would like to nail down the business license fees and identify what a short-term rental is. And if we have those things done, then we can move out and get it to town council and get something on the books, and then we can start fine-tuning some of this stuff. But I think we've got to get the skeleton to this thing.
I think that from the consensus that I'm feeling from the rest here is that if it's owner-occupied, we're fine with it regardless of the type of dwelling. If it is not owner-occupied, then we're fine with it up until apartment complexes, so everything but apartment complexes. Still ruling out pool house / frogs that don't have kitchens. So it must be a true dwelling. And then we're reducing the business license down to one. If you have one, you must get a business license rather than four. So I think those components are something that could be placed into an ordinance that then could come before us sooner rather than later. So not kicking the can down the road. Is that?
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Yeah. I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think we've just given staff direction.
I put that. Do I need to make that a motion or no?
No, I think. No.